Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Catastrophic flooding in the Texas Hill Country is blamed for at least 24 deaths, and over 20 people are still missing. That number includes 23 girls attending a camp along the Guadalupe River. Taylor Franklin's son's attending a summer camp for boys nearby. He and his wife raced to the area.
We saw a video of a cabin that was floating, and you could see boys inside the cabin and flashlights. And we just dropped everything we were doing, threw clothes in a bag, and got in the truck and drove down here.
National Weather Service meteorologist says one river gauge saw a 22-foot rise in about 2 hours. Another holiday accident is seven people were hurt in Georgia when a boat exploded on Lake Lanier. The youngest was 5 years old. President Trump celebrated July 4th at the White House and met the deadline to sign his budget bill into law. That took place during a ceremony. This is ABC News. After a year away, the king of competitive eating returned to his throne on Friday.
Champion of the world, Joey Chestnut!
A record 17th mustard belt for Joey Chestnut as he won the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest in Brooklyn after missing last year's event because of a sponsorship dispute. Chestnut downed 70 and a half hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes, falling short of his own record of 76. A dynasty also continued on the women's side. Mickey Sudo won her 11th title. She ate 33 in 10 minutes. July 4th celebrations went forward in Philadelphia, even though the city's in the midst of a sanitation strike. District Council 33 President Greg Boulware said his union wants more from the city.
Calling us in a room and sitting down for hours after hours after hours when there's no dialogue going on is wasting our time.
LL Cool J canceled a planned performance at a city celebration, saying he would not cross a picket line. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
Why do we want to be proud to be an American? Why are we celebrating the United States?
Let's say that you're going to define America in political terms. I define it in terms of what the Founding Fathers did in 1776. An ideal that we are still trying to fully live up to. That all men, all people, I would say, are created equal. All Americans are represented by the stars and stripes. I love the 4th of July.
The Todd Allbaugh Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Matt Nair on air.
PJ Leash, the bug guy, he heads the entomology department at UW-Madison, and we are talking ticks.
When a deer tick transmits Lyme disease, it takes 36 hours, so about a day and a half. And that's why, in my mind, one of the single best things you can do as a precaution is to do regular tick checks. Because you've removed it, your risk goes down greatly to basically zilch.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app. As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Barr. If you're spending more time outside this holiday weekend, experts are warning about a new breed of tick and the bizarre allergy it can spread with just one bite. It's known as the Lone Star tick, and the bug is finding its way to Wisconsin from the southeast part of the country. Doctors with Mayo Clinic say they're already starting to see more patients with what's known as alpha-gal syndrome. It's an allergy to red meat after being bit by this type of tick. And these ticks aren't just in the woods.
You go back 30 years ago and you'd think of, a hunter, an avid hiker out in the woods. Now we're starting to see ticks pop up sometimes in backyards in suburban areas and stuff like that. And that's a concern.
PJ Leash is an entomologist at the UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. And though this new tick is spreading, he still considers Lyme disease from a deer tick the bigger concern. Leash also suggests using insect spray, wearing long sleeves and pants, and always checking for ticks after spending time outside. Are you noticing farmers spending more time outside working in the fields? The weather in some parts of the state is challenging and may not mean all the corn crops are knee-high by the 4th of July. The latest crop report shows farmers across Wisconsin had just 3.5 days with workable conditions during the last week. And did you know our state is ranked second for having the most organic farms in the country? Officials with Naturally Wisconsin and the Food Finance Institute are starting a new program to support those efforts and say there's also growing consumer demand for natural, healthy, and sustainable products. The group's already working with more than 800 food-focused entrepreneurs from all across the state. You can find more news anytime at civicmedia.us. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin is brats on the grill for a tailgate, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms today, highs in the low 80s. Tonight, showers and storms clear out. We'll see a low around 61. For Sunday, mostly sunny, highs near 81. For Monday, mostly sunny and a high near 81. More showers and thunderstorms possible Monday night.
It's 76 at our studios.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lyerly, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome to The Rational Revolution with Mark Becker. Coming up, a best of program featuring Paul Page, an interview that Mark did for Independence Day last year. However, before we get to that rebroadcast, let's get a message from Mark Becker regarding a statement he made last week on the show.
Hey everyone, Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right, it's about right versus wrong, and I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Oh my goodness, you're back for another exciting, wonderful, historic episode, I'm going to say on this one, of The Rational Revolution. You know, this show typically talks about news and current events and all these types of things, but occasionally I want to go outside the racing line here, if you will, and that is absolutely a foreshadowing. I'm going to talk to you just a little bit and set this up. I have been a huge fan of auto racing since I've been 7 years old. Cars has been a big part of my youth, and now I run a car dealership, so that's part of that is ingrained in who I am. I do race myself. I compete on the local dirt track circuit in a street stock. Let me tell you what, that's a hell of a time. Growing up, my favorite driver was the Tide car of Ricky Rudd. And that was a blast to watch. But then my eyes were opened and I found a series called Championship Auto Racing Teams, or CART. It was an open wheel series that kind of is like a modern day IndyCar. I competed with IndyCar. And my favorite drivers morphed from Ricky Rudd to people like Alex Zanardi, Greg Moore, Juan Montoya, Dario Franchitti. Some of those names you might know. And this series had the best drivers in the world. They raced in iconic tracks like here at Road America, Michigan International Speedway, streets of Long Beach. They even raced at an airport in Cleveland, which was my favorite track, by the way. And the series itself was larger than life. And it was really cool because my brother and I bonded over each one of the races. We lived and died by the results of that week's race. And then we, of course, counted down to the start of the next race. And we hung on every word that came from the microphone of the timeless and legendary broadcaster, Paul Page, who now joins us today on The Rational Revolution. I cannot tell you how honored I am to have you here, Paul. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's great to be here. That was quite an introduction. Those were good days, too, weren't they?
They were. I mean, it was such an incredible time to be a fan of motorsports. And, you know, like what you've done in not only motorsports, but broadcasting in itself is remarkable. You know, you did everything from motorsports to the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, for God's sakes, I found out. But I kind of want to, you know, you are an iconic name in racing.
Thank you. Thanks for
you to say. And, you know, you were the voice behind some of the most famous moments in the sport. You know, how did you get involved in broadcasting?
Well, I actually got more involved in racing first. I went to the Indy 500 when I was 15 years old, and I just thought, man, I got to do something that involves this.
Okay.
So cool. And, then when I was away in the Army, I had kind of an interest in broadcasting, and I'd done a little something in high school, but when I was in the Army, I actually went to a school for military broadcasters.
No
when
kidding.
I got then back to Indianapolis, I got a job. I'm a small job at a small radio station. At the same time, I was working for George Bignotti at his shop. And so I had the best of both worlds going for me. But, of course, the job at Bignotti's was kind of a quid pro quo. You can come to the races as long as you come to the shop and work. but one thing led to another, and I became I was primarily doing radio news, which I really enjoyed, at a station in Indy called WIBC, which was the flagship station for the Speedway Radio Network, Indianapolis Speedway Radio Network. And one thing led to another. I met the guy who created that network, Sid Collins, and yes, he and I became close friends, and he started grooming me to be a play-by-play sportscaster of motorsports. And when he passed away, the job came to me. It was really that simple. And, you know, I just came to it with passion. I wanted everybody to feel about it the way I felt about it. So that's how I tried to portray it in a way that would say that this is cool and these people are worth every moment of your attention.
Yeah. And, you know, and for those who don't know Sid Collins, he was the person who coined the term the greatest spectacle in racing, in reference to the Indianapolis 500, which I think it absolutely is all of that. So racing was the end goal. That was a question that I was going to ask you. So it was something that you wanted to get into broadcasting, but you wanted to get into broadcasting specifically to call motor races.
Right. There was actually a period of time there when I actually thought I was a race driver.
And, really?
I raced in the SCCA in a Formula Ford.
That's right.
In fact, I took my driver's school, my first driver's school at Road America.
Oh, no kidding.
And at the time, I didn't know anything about Road America, despite the fact that I'm a military brat, and my last place that I lived with the family was on the north side of Chicago.
Okay.
So I really should have known about it, but I was more focused on Indy and stuff like that. But I knew I wanted to try to be a race driver, and I ended up going to the SCCA, and you had to take two driver schools. One was here in Indianapolis, and the other was Road America. And Augie Papps was our chief instructor. Just pulling up to Road America and saying, oh, my goodness, look at this place.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And it really, really was an enjoyable time. And I love going back there. But anyhow, my 7-year career of racing Formula Fords and SCCA netted me, I think, 3 pewter cups.
Oh, nice.
And certainly no cash. And,
no.
And I said, you know, this is really not for you. You can drive fast, which I could, but I could not compete strongly against other guys right alongside of me. I mean, I did okay, but
I would imagine, I'd imagine
you probably know the same feeling. You know, you're there, you're fast, but you're not quite fast enough.
Right. I would imagine that gives you a lot of perspective on what it took to call a race. You know, actually going through the turns and seeing what the drivers go through.
Yeah, especially since a lot of the drivers out of that era, well, still many of them today, come through the Formula Ford ranks on their way to the pros. And with the Formula Ford of that day, with no aerodynamics, you really had to know how to I call it love the car. Mm. You have to be able to get it in and out of corners smoothly. It didn't have any real power to speak of, so you learn management of power, and it was a great car to learn how to race in.
Yeah, I this past weekend actually I went to my first SCCA race, and it was the June Sprints at Road America that we had.
Oh my God, is that the greatest or what?
Oh my gosh. Well, and so a friend of mine, he operates and he manufactures and like soups up Mini Cooper B-Spec. So a B-Spec for listeners is like front wheel drive, like a Ford Fiesta or, you know, and they take these cars and strip them all down and make them little mini rocket ships. And I called our local SCCA guy who does all the testing and everything. And I said, well, I have racing experience. So, you know, do I have to still go to the school? And I didn't hear back because I called him on that Thursday, and that was June Sprints, which is, I mean, hundreds of cars was there.
Yeah.
And then I went to my first event, and I was just like gobsmacked by, you know, the difference in what I do racing in circles in a dirt track to what it takes to do that, even at that low level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so
I will tell you a story. Since you mentioned June Sprints, which of course everybody wanted to go to.
Oh yeah.
And in the day we have, I guess what we were driving you call Club Ford today.
Sure.
And the our field was the full subscription for Road America, 80 Formula Fords.
Jeez.
And so there is the bridge going up the hill, right?
Yep.
And so the rule in SCCA was green to the front row is green to the field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you qualified like in the 20th row or something, you wouldn't see the green flag when it came out.
Right.
You're coming up the hill.
Yeah.
So we got a guy to get on the bridge, and he had a little bagel orange disc. And as soon as the green flag came out, he's on the bridge, and he starts waving that. And so we can see it. So now we're passing all these guys who don't know about that. that's a kind of a Roger Penske move. Isn't
oh, yeah.
It?
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
We read the rules as closely as we could.
Yeah, that's right. And you followed them. That's right.
Yep.
It's within the rule. It was I met a guy that was on the road to Indy, and his name is Bobby Eberly. I'm sure he'll listen to this. He's a great guy. And he was on a quest to become the oldest rookie to ever qualify for the Indianapolis 500. And he ultimately didn't do it. Yeah, it was really cool. And, you know, he gave me like backstage passes, if you will, to when he was in Pro Mazda. Yeah. So that's like two rungs down from IndyCar. And that was a number of years ago. But to see those cars going full speed up that hill towards the green flag at Road America was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had in my life. I hope people can do that at some point, because it really is remarkable. And then this past weekend, we went to, for the first time, I've been to Road America a number of times, but I've never been to Siepkins. And that is a very famous racing bar, and they have like autographs. I think Paul Newman autographed the wall. Mm-hmm. There's a picture of Mario Andretti, and he autographed that. And so, you know, it's so cool because, you know, I took my boys there, and they got to see the sights and hear the engines, and you know, I hope that they have a love for motorsports instilled in them, because then, you know, they get to go to these events and see the wonder and the awe that is performance race cars doing truly incredible things.
Yep.
Yeah, it is something. And it really was a remarkable experience. And we're going to continue this discussion on the other side with Paul Page. We're going to talk about how the industry of broadcasting works in motorsports. We'll be right back.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee, on June 7th, presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's Independence Resolution word for word. Resolved that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's National Handshake Day, but I find the idea that you just meet someone and you're holding a body part of theirs kind of odd. Hello, stranger. I'd like to squeeze your hand. Let's have an intimate act here. I have no idea where it's been or how you choose to use your hand in your spare time, but I'd like to hold it for a while. Unless it's a friend. Look, I don't know why we have to touch each other when we barely know each other.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution with host Mark Becker. We'll get back to his conversation he had last year with Paul Page, legendary broadcaster. First, once again, that message from Mark Becker about a comment he made last week on the show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion. But, you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
One thing I can tell you is you've got to be free. Come together.
Welcome back on the Rational Revolution. You've got Mark Becker, and we have a special episode here continuing with legendary motorsports broadcaster Paul Page is with us. And I want to talk about, I'm going to take you back to when you were in the thick of it. And, you know, one of the things that I think makes you so timeless is from a general broadcasting sense, you had the talent to, I could close my eyes and I could picture what was happening on the television. And I don't know if I've ever experienced that since. radio broadcasters, you know, MRN, PRN, the guy, those folks, they come close, but it's not Paul Page. And how do you prepare for something like that?
You have to paint the picture, and you have to think about how you're going to do that. And so you end up putting a lot of adjectives in there. You know, this color, this car is not just blue. I mean, it's royal blue, and it's sparkling in the sun, that sort of thing. And the more you do that, and the more you create that theater, the more you become accustomed to narrating in that particular way. And the idea then that when you are done, that you have painted some sort of a picture that the fan can follow. If you look at television and the television part of my career, I was always taught to be, and by Sid and others, a storyteller. Mm. And we don't see that much of that today. Not no. that that's wrong. It's just the way things have gone. But when I was coming up, the real thing with all of us was to tell the story, to have, don't just, well, here's a great example. Here's Al Unser Jr. and Emerson Fittipaldi, and they're racing for the win at the Indy 500.
Yes, yep.
And I decided as a television guy that I told the story. I set everything up, what it meant to those two individuals, how important, mm-hmm. how significant this was, how significant it was in the world of motorsports, because Indy is the pinnacle.
Yes.
And then I decided, we've been watching these two guys. We know what the story is. And then I just went silent. And every lap or so, it was for about six laps, I would just say, you know, there's 15 miles to go, laps to go.
Yeah.
And then I'd let it breathe. And so when they finally got to turn three on the final laps, and they got together and little Al spun, and Emerson went on to win, that picture had been painted. It was there visually, and you let the viewer, just help the viewer enjoy what's there.
And so when those moments happen, you know, is it something where you can prepare for, like, or is this really just off the cuff that you kind of come up with these things?
Yeah, I see your further question, yes. There is. And that is, in my world, immersion. You have to talk to all of these people, and not just the drivers. You talk to team members and mechanics and owners and everything, and you just keep that conversation going. So you become part of that community and part of that flow. And by doing that, and then the real problem that I had was at the beginning, I would take all the publications and I'd read them.
Oh, okay.
And then I'd go to the track and I would start talking with people. And I'd end up being confused because talking to the people was real time.
Yes.
And sometimes the publications I was reading were like a week old. And so they were contradictory to one another. So I had to cut back on the publications quite a bit and just do primary research with all those guys. And, of course, being friends with many of them, that paid off a lot, too. And then the other thing about it was being honest with them. I would keep their secrets. They would come and tell me, hey, we're trying this at this race. If it works, you can talk about it. If it doesn't, shut up.
That's awesome.
And so, all of those things kind of paid off. And I talk about that actually quite a bit in my book. Hello, I'm Paul Page. It's race day in Indianapolis.
Yes.
It's more immersion than anything else. And when you're doing a series, you know, when you're doing one team for baseball and doing all their games, you get into that mode because you're with them all the time.
Yes. And during the broadcast, how did you, we got a minute left in the segment. How did you tune everybody else out to really focus on bringing that message to the country?
Well, the message of the secrets that I might have.
Of the race, of the
across
action.
Across the board. Yeah. That's the point where I sit down and I say, I'm going to treat the audience like they're sitting next to me in the grandstand.
How beautiful.
And they haven't been to a race. Some of them may have been to one or two. So I treat it that way, that I'm sitting with my friends, and I'm telling my friends what's going on.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. And that was, you know, I think that's something that we're going to talk about here in the next segment, you know, because that's something that was so critical and so important of a key that you brought to the broadcast that I don't see in any form of motorsport right now. So we're going to talk about that on the other side. We've got legendary broadcaster Paul Page here in the Rational Revolution. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Catastrophic flooding in the Texas Hill Country is blamed for at least 24 deaths, and over 20 people are still missing. That number includes 23 girls attending a camp along the Guadalupe River. Taylor Franklin's son's attending a summer camp for boys nearby. He and his wife raced to the area.
We saw a video of a cabin that was floating, and you could see boys inside the cabin and flashlights. And we just dropped everything we were doing, threw clothes in a bag, and got in the truck and drove down here.
National Weather Service meteorologist says one river gauge saw a 22-foot rise in about 2 hours. Another holiday accident is seven people were hurt in Georgia when a boat exploded on Lake Lanier. The youngest was 5 years old. President Trump celebrated July 4th at the White House and met the deadline to sign his budget bill into law. That took place during a ceremony. This is ABC News.
The Brewers in Miami. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Marlins going at it this afternoon in South Florida, where it's hot, humid, and in the 90s. Last night, the Brewers held on to beat the Marlins 6-5, thanks to closer Trevor McGill getting his 19th save of the season. Pat Murphy asked, why did he decide to keep McGill in the game despite two men on and the Marlins slugger Otto Lopez at the plate?
I know I'm looking at the clock, and what time was it? I looked at the clock, and it was like 9:48, and I'm like, Milwaukee's an hour behind, and when am I? My kid's going to go to bed, so I got to be able to FaceTime to go to bed. So that was one thing I was thinking. The other thing I was thinking of just how proud I am of McGill. Just every big situation, he's just a great competitor, you know, and keeps coming at you. Close call, whatever, it doesn't affect him. It's just, he's been sensational. That's what I was thinking about. When my kids are going to go sleep so I can FaceTime them, and then that. What else was I thinking about? Like all the things I was thinking about? I mean, I had a lot of things on my mind.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Devil Wears Prada is coming back, but not every cast member will return. The production started last week on Prada 2. Meryl Streep, Anne Hathaway, Emily Blunt, and Stanley Tucci are all back. Adrian Grenier, however, will not be back as Nate Cooper in the sequel. He played Anne Hathaway's love interest and a short order cook in the first film. Grenier's claim to fame is, of course, the show Entourage, but he has not done much since. In other casting news, actor Kenneth Branagh will join the production as Meryl Streep's character, Miranda Priestley's husband. There's a new action comedy that might be worth a look. Heads of State tells the story of the UK Prime Minister, played by Idris Elba, and the United States President, played by John Cena, which seems more realistic than it's ever been. The two characters butt heads but have to team up to overthrow a global plot that threatens freedom. The film is receiving a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and an 85% audience score and can be streamed on Amazon Prime. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local news, weather, and sports on air and streaming on the Civic Media app. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Showers and thunderstorms today, highs in the low 80s. Tonight, showers and storms clear out. We'll see a low around 61. For Sunday, mostly sunny, highs near 81. For Monday, mostly sunny and a high near 81. More showers and thunderstorms possible Monday night.
Right now, it's 74.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. Screenings help diagnose lung cancer early when it's most treatable, even curable. A quick low-dose CT scan is all it takes. Go-To for lung cancer is your go-to. Visit goto.org.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Tracy Ann Mangold, how would you describe what it is that Brian Schimming is caught in the crossfires of?
He's the first paid state chair that they've ever had. And so the belief was that maybe that'll increase his ability to fundraise for the state. Obviously, that has not worked out so well. I've been told that he thinks 4 phone calls a day to fundraise is a lot, which, you know, isn't.
104 might be a good start.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday, we'll review the holiday weekend. Hope yours has been good. Also, Kristen Lyerly, John and Gordy, and Jane Matinere will join us as well.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to The Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll get back to Mark Becker's conversation with legendary broadcaster Paul Page from last year, a best of program this week. But once again, that message from Mark Becker about last week's show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion. But, you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right. It's about right versus wrong. And I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is a fun one. We've got my childhood hero, Paul Page, legendary broadcaster of Open Wheel and all things fast here on the show. And I wanted to talk about one of the things that you were so especially good at, and you kind of touched on it before the break, is I feel that if you're a fan of motorsports, it's a little bit of a niche thing. And so yep. You have to kind of tell people why they should, like you said earlier in the show, put all of your attention to these humans that are doing incredibly remarkable things. And I think you had such a perfect balance between talking to people who tune in religiously every week, but also balancing that with welcoming in new people to the broadcasts and allowing them to learn.
Well, that's nice of you to say, because that was one of the objectives.
Oh, cool.
We knew that we were a niche and that there were a lot of people that didn't know us, but if they did, we thought that we would be able to keep them. And so you had to balance that broadcast with going for the connoisseur and making sure you put enough of that kind of meat into it, the little technical things or the little driver facts that they really love. But you also then had to almost constantly be updating the person that's just stepped into the chair for the first time. And so you really make me feel good that you say that because that was part of our objective, was we had to figure out how to do both.
It was. And, you know, and I think, like, it's, you know, my son likes to watch NASCAR, and there's so often.
I'm sorry for him.
I know. Well, we're getting into Open Wheel a little more because, you know, but the broadcasting, you know, every time they talk about, you know, the new one lug nut, which is so funny how that's like this remarkable, oh my God, moment for NASCAR. We went to one lug nut to hold on the wheel, which is what IndyCar and CART have been doing for 30 freaking years. But then they cut to this same graphic that goes for a minute and 45 seconds. That's like, okay, here we go again. You know, where you have someone that was a real professional that can explain that in layman's terms and then move on. Right. Yeah. And so that was something that was, it was so easy to get sucked into the world of CART because it was a circus. It really was.
Yes, it very definitely was.
And
we'd call it that internally.
Oh, did you really?
Uh-huh.
No kidding.
Yep, the circus is starting again. Here we go.
Yeah, right. And I mean, there was the highest of highs and the lowest of the lows. And I remember my favorite driver was the old Red Gloves, Greg Moore. He's a guy from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
what a beautiful human being.
Wasn't he? You know, yes. And I can remember the very moment in Fontana where Greg's tire dug in and he hit the wall head on. And Paul, I can remember the inflection of your voice when you watched it and you just said, "Oh my God." I remember that, Paul. I got goosebumps. I can remember that like it was yesterday. And they just celebrated, or not celebrated, they just, you know, remembered. What was it, 20 years since he died?
Yeah.
How, it's something like, I mean, it, but I remember that, like it was yesterday. And I know it wasn't typically you that would have to break that news that someone has passed away. You know, it was typically Jerry Punch or a pit reporter or something. But inevitably, they always cut back to you. And it was you, the voice of comfort, the voice of, okay, guys, here's how we're going to get through this. I mean, I cried. When I was a little kid, I cried when I found out that Greg Moore had passed away. And the cameras turned to you. How do you deal with something like the unthinkable?
Well, I had to do it too many times.
Yeah.
If you were lucky, I say that advisedly, you'd have a bad accident, but the individual was not killed at the track.
Yeah.
And then it got delayed and you didn't have to deal with it because it was announced after the race.
Oh, sure.
But when you had things like Greg Moore and Krasnov and Coletta, it just...
Scott Brayton, yeah.
It just rips your heart out, again, because they're your friends, they're your buddies, they're your brothers.
Yeah.
And Greg Moore especially, because that morning I was down doing my usual troll through the pits, and he and I were talking, and, you know, he had a great future coming. He was going to go to Penske the next year.
Yes.
And Lord knows how many races he would have won.
Oh, my God.
But he had wrecked his scooter the night before.
I remember that.
And in doing it, he broke his some bones in his hand, and they created a special splint fiberglass thing to hold his hand so he could race. And he was laughing about it and laughing about, you know, the lidocaine that they were putting there is so good. Maybe they ought to put it in my butt so I won't feel how high the gravity G's are on the race car.
Yeah.
We're just having a great time. And then to see that, and you do this long enough, you know instantly what it was.
Yeah.
And then to have to wait, because everybody's got to be notified. It's all got to be dealt with. In that particular case, the people running IndyCar got a little off base in that they came up with this idea of they were going to lower the flags and call a yellow light and then make the announcement. This is, you know, it's not what this is. This man has died. He's got a family crying. Well, this is not the time you do those kind of things. I was furious.
All right.
And on the other side of the glass next to me was the race control and Wally Dahlenbeck, the chief steward, and we just kept looking at each other like, what are they doing? Why are they doing it this way? And so finally we said, you know, they can do whatever they want. And they actually brought the flags down once, and then they put them back up. They couldn't coordinate anything.
Wow.
And so I just said, we know everybody's notified. We're going to tell the audience. Because they need to know. Their hearts are in their mouths over that accident, too.
Yeah.
So, but dealing with those, then you reach down and you try to remember the good things and try to give some ease to the pain that I think everybody is feeling.
Right.
When you have those kind of things. Just horrible. And, you know, we're unlike any other sport, motor sports. It is not only possible, it is somewhat likely that you will have a serious or a fatal accident at one time or another.
Yeah. And here we're talking with legendary broadcaster Paul Page. And I think, and it's no disrespect to the, you know, Scott Braytons of the world, but I think, you know, when you can see, Greg Moore was what, 24, I think?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And the legacy that he left in his such short time in American open wheel racing, and everybody knows him and everybody, you know, just remarks about what an incredibly, genuinely wonderful person he was. What a legacy that is, you know, and I can't imagine how many champions he'd probably gone to Formula One. Oh my God, he was so good.
There is a little Greg Moore story there that I'll
okay. I'd love it.
When he was just trying to get an IndyCar or a kart ride at that time, one day I'm looking at this kid who is hanging around in front of Roger Penske's operation, his team set up at the track. And he's just standing. He stood there for a couple of hours. Every time I go by, this kid's still standing. And it was Greg Moore.
Really?
And he was looking for an opportunity to talk to Roger Penske. And so I finally said to one of Penske's lieutenants, a guy named Dan Lubinville, I said, Dan, this kid's been standing out here, really wants to talk to Roger. What do you think? He's all, we got to get him in. And so they arranged for him to talk to Roger. And, of course, he, at that time, he didn't go to Roger. He was with Forsythe that year. But Roger liked him, and Roger was going to put him in a car in the next year.
That's crazy. That's so cool.
But he stayed with it. He's standing out there, and he's going to stand there until he gets to talk to Roger. And that was super.
That's awesome. Wow. And how much of that is, you know, does exist today about... You know, and I don't know how it was with kart, but in IndyCar, there's a certain number of seats that, like, and I don't want to disrespect any drivers, but it's like they're not the best because some of them, and it's a decent number, are paid, and they buy their way into the series. And was that like that back then as well?
It was. It wasn't as prevalent, and when I started, the driver got a portion of the purse.
No,
so you'll notice we never announce the purse anymore because we don't really know what it is.
Right.
But usually then 60% went to the driver and the rest was then allocated to the owner and the team mechanics and you know, whatever else. Now it's not that way at all. You'll never hear what they're paid.
No.
And I actually think that in many ways, today, the field is far deeper than it was back then.
Really?
I really believe any time they take a green flag now, that there's a good chance that 15 of them are capable of winning. But in those days, it was number more like 7 or 8. If you're really on top of it, you could probably tell that it was going to be this guy or that guy. And more often than not, you could say it's going to be that guy.
Yeah.
But you really had to be there, and you had to have the feeling, and you had to be talking to everybody and see what their attitudes were to be able to do that.
Yeah.
The thing I have with today's drivers that kind of bothers me is they've become corporate guys.
Yes.
You don't see, you know, well, you mentioned Alex Zanardi. It was just a joy to be around.
Oh, my gosh.
Always joking around, having a great time. He loved what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, we've got Elio, who is that way.
Yes.
And we, you know, Tony Kanaan was certainly that way, but we're losing those guys, and we're losing them to guys who have been trained to be, and properly so. They got to develop a personality that a corporate boardroom will like.
Right.
And so no controversy, you know, they just, they just try to, they're very vanilla.
Yeah.
And I wish some of them had more out there to say. I love it. Racing is conflict. So it can be conflict off the track too, you know?
Right. One of the things that attracted me to motorsports was the quality of the broadcast. And that's why when I went to Road America the first time, and it was in my adulthood, I took all of those memories that you gave me with me along to the track. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about where IndyCar, where motorsports is today on the other side of the break. We'll see you in a little bit.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Ever since I started the recombobulation area, I've written an in-depth breakdown of every new edition of the Marquette University Law School poll. The newest poll asks about a range of topics, whether Tony Evers should run for a third term, where people stand on Donald Trump's economic policies, and a host of issues relating to the state budget. The poll paints a picture of a polarized Wisconsin. Many people are very dug into their partisan camps, which is perhaps to be expected in the most evenly divided state in the nation. But there are a number of issues polled that do have the support of more than two-thirds of Wisconsin voters. Those include extending Medicaid coverage for new moms, legalizing marijuana, making major increases in state aid for special education, providing mental health services in schools, allowing citizen-led ballot initiatives, and banning cell phones in schools. What do most of these issues have in common? They are policies being advanced by Democrats in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Thomas Jefferson is credited with most of the text of the Declaration of Independence, but the independence part came from a Virginian named Richard Henry Lee on June 7, 1776. The First Continental Congress sent a list of grievances in 1774 to King George III, among them the loss of their rights under English law, the occupation by British forces in peacetime, and the oppressive coercive acts passed by Parliament to shut down colonial unrest. The King and Parliament didn't respond other than to pass more restrictive laws. By mid-May 1776, 8 colonies supported independence, including Virginia, which directed its delegates to support independence at the Second Continental Congress. Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee on June 7th presented his resolution for independence to the Congress in Philadelphia, which tabled action until July 2nd. In the interim, Thomas Jefferson, with light editing by Benjamin Franklin and John Adams, crafted a statement which would become the Declaration of Independence, which included Richard Henry Lee's independence resolution word for word. Resolved that these united colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is, and ought to be, totally dissolved. Read the full Declaration of Independence at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Madam Mayor, Satya Rhodes Conway from the fabulous city of Madison.
A lot of people say, I don't like politics. It's all dirty and angry and blah, blah, blah. It's really about caring about your community, finding a way to, like, bring it back to people talking to each other.
Yeah.
About what is important in our place and how do we take care of each other and use the levers of government to do that. That's really what it's about.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show at its new time, weekdays 4 till 6 p.m. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll get back to Mark Becker's conversation with legendary broadcaster Paul Page from last year, a best of program this week. But once again, that message from Mark Becker about last week's show.
Hey, everyone. Mark here. Hey, if I make a mistake that might cast doubt in the hearts and the minds of our listeners when it comes to especially stuff like the election, I do want to get that corrected because that's true to my integrity and it's true to the integrity of the show. Last week, in the heat of discussion, I incorrectly said that Kamala Harris got more votes than Donald Trump. She didn't. She got about 2 million less. However, the point I was trying to make was that Donald Trump keeps saying that he has this mandate. He doesn't. The fact is, the majority of the country voted for someone else. And that was the point that I was trying to make. So I'm sorry if that caused any confusion, but you know, on this show, it's not about left versus right, it's about right versus wrong, and I want to make sure that we get that one right. So thank you for listening, and looking forward to seeing you down the road. We'll see you next week.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. This is awesome. We got Paul Page, legendary broadcaster, joining me here today, and this is an honor and a thrill, and again, thank you so much for being here.
I'm glad to do it. It's fun.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about where the sport is today. So I bought your book. I bought the book that John Roskowitz had called The Split, which talks about the split between IndyCar and CART, and then kind of comes back. And so I started those books. But I want to talk about where IndyCar is today, because it is not the same as CART.
No, it's not. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, CART was such a thrill because it had so many different manufacturers. We had Mercedes and Honda and Toyota and Buick and Chevrolet and different cars. You look at what a car was like on an oval, and you had the Hondas with the swept wing that went down that looked like a stealth fighter, and you had the Chevys that had the straight wing, and it looked different. And today you have Chevrolet and Honda. I think Honda wants to get out of it, if I read that article right. And all the cars are the same. And it's like NASCAR with open wheels, you know?
Right.
So, it
very definitely is, it very definitely is a spec series now. It's the Formula Ford.
Yes.
The big cars. And, excuse me. In being that hands everything to the driver, but it takes some of the development excitement away.
Yes.
I mean, I really enjoyed it when we had all those different cars. And, you know, there was technology changes, and you could beat somebody with some small change to the way you designed your rear wing, or you put a splitter in
right.
You can't do any of that stuff.
No, none of it.
And so that hands it to the driver, but it takes away all the good things that the designers, the engineers, and the mechanics are capable of. What did it to them was cost.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Once they became mixed in with all the other sports, and now you're vying for ratings and time, the cost to create one of those cars started to skyrocket. And the owners decided they needed more of a common car that was really strictly regulated. So now we have the Dallara.
Yep.
You can't do that much to it. My son is an engineer on the Andretti team.
That's right.
And he constantly says, you know, geez, I wish we could work on them more, but it's the goal they've been given. But yeah, it takes a lot of the background excitement away.
So what can they do to the car? He's an engineer. Like, is it internal? You know, with like tuning the engines, or is, you know, what kind of things can they do?
None of that.
None of it.
The engine comes in a case from either Chevrolet, which is really Elmore. It's badged as a Chevrolet.
Okay.
Or from Honda, where it is a true Honda.
They're crate motors?
And they bring it in and they send an engineer with it. And you can't modify anything on that engine. You can't touch that engine.
Oh, my gosh.
And then with regard to the chassis, there are some small part replacements, and the sport itself is often calling for little changes, mostly related to safety.
Sure.
But any change that you make or want to make, you've got to get the clearance of IndyCar, and it has to be shared with everybody else. So, but that does keep overall costs down.
Yeah.
So you could do what Formula One does, which spends an ungodly amount of money.
A Bolt costs $5,000.
But their races are disappointing.
Yes.
I mean, I enjoy it. I watch them, but they're so single file.
Yes.
And then they got that whole DRS thing.
Yes.
That's a great idea, except if I'm coming up to pass you and I'm using DRS, you can't fight me back. You're just a sitting duck. That'll make sense.
Right.
I mean, push to pass exists in IndyCar, but at least both of you can use it.
Right. You can fight it.
Yeah. It's more of a driver's series, and in many ways that's good. We see some spectacular runs, like we saw
last weekend. I mean,
yes,
Paulo was just, he's an amazing little guy.
And is he long for IndyCar?
Colton Herta, which is,
Is he long for IndyCar, or do you think he'll go to Formula One?
No, I think he'll stay in IndyCar.
Oh, cool.
Most of the guys that come to IndyCar, they end up staying there because they've trained maybe in one of the lesser series of Formula One. You know, they've done Formula 3 or Formula 2, and it's an atmosphere that is not particularly pleasant for them.
Well, Paul Page, this was fun. Thank you so very much for bringing this alive to us here in our audience.
Thank you, Mark.
Yes, this was great. I wish you nothing but the best, and it was really an honor to speak with you today.
And was with you as well. You have a good time.
You too, sir. Have a great 4th. Thank you.
Mark's back next week with a brand new show. This is The Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. There is a flash flood emergency in effect for parts of Burnett, Williamson, and Travis County, Texas. That's northwest of Austin. Is catastrophic flooding in the Hill Country, already blamed for at least 24 deaths, and more than 20 people are still missing. Many of them are campers at a girls' summer camp. ABC's Mireya Villarreal has more.
The families of the missing, some of them are actually posting pictures with their names and information of many of these campers, trying to get the word out there of what their children look like, trying to aid in the rescue and the search any way they can.
President Trump called the flooding shocking and pledged federal help. Friday, he celebrated the holiday at the White House and signed the massive spending bill into law. It cuts taxes for many of the wealthiest Americans, but it also reduces access to Medicaid and nutritional assistance. And some Republicans have voiced concerns about how it will impact the federal deficit. This is ABC News. Recent immigration